This is a Charles Russell Speechlees podcast.
Welcome to the second episode of The New Normal. This series is intended to give listeners a quick and informative guide as to the various legal issues arising out of COVID-19, which are affecting and which may affect the construction industry in the future. My name is Jane Robertson. I'm an associate with Charles Russell Speechlees in the construction team, and I will be leading the discussion in this episode. Joining me today, we have James Worthington, a partner in the construction team. James and I are going to be discussing how future contracts can be amended in order to deal with COVID-19. In our last episode, we discussed how the standard form contracts deal with COVID-19 in their unamended form. This is important for contracts which had been entered before COVID-19 was known about and therefore would not directly address COVID-19 as an issue. However, going forwards, because of the impact COVID-19 has had across the industry, it would be sensible for it to be specifically dealt with in contracts so that there's no question as to where the risk lies. So James, I know we've had numerous requests from clients to deal with COVID-19 in contracts that have been negotiated in its wake. So if we could begin by discussing some of the clauses that you have seen amendments being made to.
The general position seems to be that going forward as well, contractors are going to be entitled to claim time but not money. When people are negotiating amendments to construction contracts now that COVID-19 is known about. The rationale for this is based on the fact that if you get time but not money, that in effect means each party bears its own cost of delays. So the employer can't claim liquidated damages for any delay, and therefore it bears its cost of delay. And equally, the contractor can't claim loss and expense for the extra costs it suffers as a result of being on site for longer. There are, of course, contractors who are seeking to push for both time and money. And equally, there are potentially employers backed up by certain funders who are saying, well, actually, no, this is known about, this should be potentially a full contract risk and therefore no time and no money. When considering these issues, though, I think the more important point is what exactly are we trying to address when considering these risks? COVID-19 is not necessarily one thing, it's not one risk, but it's actually a range of things. And potentially these need to be addressed individually so that for some of them, they may be fully contracted risks, some of them may be time but not money, and even some of them could be full employer risks. So for example, what happens if the site is closed if a worker tests positive? What happens if there's a lack of labour because people having to quarantine, are they falling ill? Is COVID-19 causing delay to statutory undertakers? Another big issue is who is bearing the risk of inefficiency on site due to complying with the new site operating procedures? And looking forward, if there's a second wave of COVID-19, which causes the government to close construction sites, which of course they've not done at the moment, or put more restrictions on travel, which may disrupt the supply of labour and materials to site, who bears those risks? These are all matters that should be considered when drafting future contracts.
Thanks, James. So based on that, all of the sort of examples that you gave would be obviously linked back to COVID-19. So presumably COVID-19 would then be defined under the building contract. So what advice would you give in that regard?
Sure, yes, you're quite right. People are starting to find COVID-19 in building contracts. And it is worth considering, for example, you can have quite broad definitions that just refer to pandemics, or you can have quite specific definitions that just refer to this strain of COVID-19. Quite commonly, it's linked to the World Health Organization's definition. But when drafting it, things to consider include, will this drafting capture a second wave, particularly if there are future mutations? And even if there is, if we're incredibly unlucky and there's a pandemic of another type of virus or another type of or maybe a bad strain of flu next year, will that be captured as well, or is that going to be unaddressed in the contract?
Yeah, I think there's quite a lot to consider there, isn't there, for a simple definition?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see, for example, different viruses, for example, bird flu, thinking back a few years, you can see if something like that started to happen next year, people will be much more sensitive, and will governments trigger lockdown earlier than they might otherwise have done, having had this recent experience? So those are the types of issues to consider.
Yeah, and I know that there, and in your answer to my first question, you spoke about the fact that in the UK we actually haven't had enforced site closures. So under the JCT standard form we discussed in the first podcast, that contractors are entitled to extension of time in relation to changes in law, but there have been various new laws and policies and guidance brought in around COVID-19. So are you seeing any amendments to this clause, perhaps to broaden what a change in law would be defined as?
I think this is an issue that contractors are going to start to look at quite closely. At the moment, there's been quite a number of government guidance, government recommendations issued. There's obviously, of course, been the Coronavirus Act as well. But the way the government is bringing these recommendations forward, it's not necessarily always doing them under the Coronavirus Act. And this means that there's quite a bit of uncertainty as to whether these government recommendations are, in effect, hard law, for example, a clear statutory instrument that obviously has an effect, or whether it's merely guidance. It's not clear. And if you look at the definition of statutory requirements in the JCT, for example, it's quite specific in that it talks about regulations having legal effect. It talks about bylaws of local authorities. And there is a possible argument that some of these guidance notes being issued by the government don't necessarily fall within statutory requirements. For example, the site operating procedures, they're best practice, but they're not necessarily legal requirements. So you can certainly see a contractor wishing to address that and to make clear that these government guidance notes being issued, and insofar as there are further ones issued, that will potentially constitute a change of law. And linked to this is parties considering how changes to the site operating procedures will be dealt with. Both if they're made stricter, is that something that will entitle the contractor to extra time, for example, but also if they're relaxed. In those situations, what happens if the contractor can bring or complete the work quicker? Will the JCT, for example, be amended to allow the completion date to be brought forward earlier? The general position in the JCT is unless you omit work, you can't bring forward the completion date. And importantly, you can never bring it forward earlier than the original completion date in the building contract.
Well, I think that makes sense, and obviously it is one to consider moving forward, and seeing as there is an abundance of guidance being given in relation to COVID-19. One of the other sort of hot topics around COVID-19 has been force majeure. Now, for those entering into new contracts, COVID-19 is foreseeable. So have you seen amendments in relation to force majeure clauses, potentially so that COVID-19 remains covered in some way?
This is an interesting question. Under the JCT, of course, force majeure is mentioned as a relevant event entitling the contractor to an extension of time, but it's not defined in any way. I think the first thing to note when considering force majeure is that there's no general requirement in English law that an event must be unforeseeable to be force majeure. Sometimes drafted that way in contracts. But if you think about it, most events are not unforeseeable. They've all happened before at some point in history. We've had pandemics before, things like war, natural disasters, they've generally all happened at some point before. The key question and how force majeure clauses are generally drafted is, was the event beyond the party's reasonable control? And the issue with this in contracts going forward, I think, is a question of causation. I think everyone would accept that COVID-19 is outside parties' control, but the effects it has on works, are they necessarily outside a party's control? And linked to this, what is the actual cause of delay? And is this outside a party's control? Parties are obviously under a duty to mitigate, and insofar as COVID-19 means there's a reduction of available labour or reduction of available materials, this might make it harder or more expensive to complete the works, but it's not necessarily beyond the parties to control to still complete the works. It may just take a bit longer or be a bit more expensive. So questions then arise, especially as the consequences of COVID-19 become more well known, and parties can therefore, it's arguable the parties can then put in place procedures and mechanisms to try and limit its effect on construction works. And so it will become harder and harder for parties to then say, well, this falls within force majeure. The other party could say, well, what has actually changed since the building contract was entered into?
Yes, and just touching on what you said there in relation to mitigation, presumably, therefore, contractors are expected to mitigate delays where caused by COVID-19.
Absolutely. The duty to mitigate in general law has not changed. And equally, the provisions in the standard forms regarding mitigation are still there. For example, the JCT requires the contractor to use best endeavours to prevent delay. And therefore, a contractor would have to consider how it could mitigate these delays and what actions it should take. For example, if there's materials that are unavailable, could it change its design to use different materials that are available?
In relation to termination, now we discussed in the previous podcast how under the unamended forms there's generally a provision where the contract can be terminated if the works have been suspended for a certain amount of time. How are these provisions being dealt with in new contracts?
Yes, this is a key issue in new contracts. Although, as you rightly note, the sites have not yet necessarily been closed by the government and most sites are now back up and running. It's obviously a concern about the potential for a second wave and whether that could close sites for a longer period, potentially over this winter. It's obviously an issue for employers. It's certainly an issue for funders. They don't want the contractor potentially to be able to walk away from a contract in the event of such a suspension. So what's generally happening is the period of such a suspension before the right to terminate can accrue is being extended. So, for example, the default in the JCT is a 2-month suspension. This is being potentially extended to 6 months. Alternatively, parties are either excluding a COVID-caused suspension completely from this clause, or they're having a longer period for the right to terminate can accrue for a COVID suspension. So, for example, other suspensions might stay at 2 months, but COVID-related suspension might be extended to 6 months.
Thanks, James. I think that's all my questions for you. Are there any other clauses which you would suggest consideration is given to?
I think we've covered the main ones. I mean, we've not particularly talked about contractors seeking more money, so they may want to, if they want the employer to bear the risk of COVID-19, either introduce it as an event that allows them to claim loss and expense for delay and disruption, and also potentially to address the cost to them of doing the works. So, for example, if there are increased import duties or things of that nature due to COVID-19, or if the cost of materials and labour, etc., increases. So that would require a fluctuations clause to be imposed in the building contract. However, these are rare and generally strongly resisted by employers and their funders, and I suspect that's unlikely to change in this situation. So even if a contractor managed to negotiate a right to claim loss and expense for COVID-19 related delays, or at least some of them, I suspect it's unlikely they'll be able to negotiate a fluctuations clause to as a general protection to increasing costs of doing the works.
Okay, James, thank you. That's an interesting point to consider. To summarise what you've said, I think it's clear that to provide clarity for the contracting parties, COVID-19 should be specifically dealt with in a construction contract. The specific amendments needed would depend on the nature of the work and the stance of the contracting parties. Again, going back to what we said in the first podcast episode, the government's guidance on responsible contracting and the Construction Leadership Council's equivalent advice for non-public contract should be taken into consideration. And also at the risk of sounding like turkeys voting for Christmas, we would recommend that legal advice should be sought in regard to COVID-19 when entering into new contracts. Thank you for listening.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.